today on Against the Grain was Frederick Engels, of Marx and Engels fame, an ecological as well as socialist thinker. When Engels wrote about the dialectics of nature, what did he mean by dialectics? I'm C.S. John Bellamy Foster's book, The Return of Nature, is a genealogy of major eco-socialist thinkers, including Engels. John joins me, coming right up. And this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. My name is C.S. Song. One of the foundational ecological thinkers of modern times, according to my guest today, was Frederick Engels. Yeah, that Engels, the guy who wrote the Communist Manifesto with Marx, the guy who authored the landmark volume The Condition of the Working Class in England. John Bellamy Foster, in his book The Return of Nature, argues that Engels's contributions to our understanding of the overall ecological problem were influential and indispensable. John Bellamy Foster is professor of sociology at the University of Oregon and the editor of Monthly Review magazine. His many books include the seminal volume Marx's Ecology and The Theory of Monopoly Capitalism. John's book, The Return of Nature, Socialism and Ecology, explores and explains the socialist origins of ecology. It focuses on the century that followed the death of Marx in 1883. When John and I connected recently, he began with these remarks about Frederick Engels.
Engels is most famous, obviously, as the associate and co-author and lifelong intellectual and political partner of Karl Marx. But Engels was much more than that. He was a major figure in his own right. In his early 20s, he developed some of the critique of political economy that Marx was later to take up. Engels was the son of a German industrialist who owned factories in Manchester, and this was fundamental to Engels's development because he had this early understanding of industrial capitalism. When he was in his early 20s, he wrote The Condition of the Working Class in England, which is considered to be the first systematic work on the Industrial Revolution, based on his experiences in Manchester, walking the streets of Manchester, looking at the conditions of the working class, together with his partner, Mary Burns, who was a young Irish working class woman. And he explored all the nooks and crannies of Manchester. He got to know what the proletariat was and what their conditions were. And he wrote this great book, The Condition of the Working Class in England, when he was 24. And he had as its central thesis that social murder was being introduced into the ranks of the working class. He focused particularly on viruses and disease and how that particularly affected the working class, looking at cholera and typhoid and typhus fever and scarlet fever and tuberculosis and so on, understanding how this was related to questions of nutrition and sanitation and epidemiological conditions in general. This work then influenced Marx, who used it as the original basis for his own analysis of the political economy of capitalism.
So let's spend a little bit of time on the condition of the working class in England, published in 1845. So he went around and checked out personally what was going on with the people, the workers in Manchester, these were the years of the Industrial Revolution. It's a large manufacturing town. So you are saying then that he was interested in, among other things, the epidemiological phenomena that were affecting and afflicting workers, and he was also, he tied them to what the capitalists were doing, what the capitalists and their allies were doing, both within the factory and outside of it?
Yeah, that's the central character of his book. It focused on these issues of public health, of epidemiology, of the spread of disease, of nutrition, of course, physical deformities that were introduced into the working class as a result of working conditions. He looked at the conditions of the Irish workers. He looked at the food. He looked at how the food was adulterated. He looked at how particular diseases were affecting the working class, specifically examining the statistics, looking at infant mortality, and so on. This was the original basis of the critique of political economy that so influenced Marx, and Marx then took it up from there.
What did Engels write about the cellars, the basements in which many people lived?
In the condition of the working class, he's looking at how, I don't remember the percentage, something like 20% of the working class was living in, very large percentage were living in cellars, and of course there was very little sanitation and drainage, and water was seeping into the cellars, and of course cholera, as they discovered about 20 years later, was spread through water. So you had these terrible conditions that he details, and he shows how they systematically, how these conditions are systematically affecting the working class in particular, and that the wealthy, capitalists became concerned mainly when you had epidemics of cholera and other epidemics that spread from the poor areas to the rich. And at that time, they became concerned with sanitation and cleaning up the cities and controlling things. But generally, they allowed these conditions to exist among the poor. So you had infant mortality rates in the working class of as high as 50% in working class districts at the time.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your book here. You report that, according to Engels, 40 to 50,000 people lived in damp, overcrowded cellars. I assume this is in Manchester. And yeah, more than half of working class children in Manchester died before the age of 5. So this was a seminal book, and it was very influential, as you're suggesting. And was this unusual in the sense that, was it unusual for Engels to focus on environmental, ecological, epidemiological conditions?
It was extremely unusual. Of course, there was, when he came to England, there were studies that were going on because of the cholera epidemics in particular. And he arrived at the time of what we call the plot riots, working class protests. And but there were cholera epidemics, and some of the governments had sent in physicians to investigate the situation. So he built on some of that analysis, but his analysis was extremely systematic, looking at the entire urban structure. He walked the cities and entered the areas of the poor and examined the whole thing and related it to the political economy. Even when he was around 22, he wrote The Condition of the Working Class when he was around 24, but when he was 22, I think it was, in Germany, he'd already looked at the conditions of workers in Germany and seen some of the same things. And this was extraordinarily new. He connected it to the Industrial Revolution. He was really the first to write about the Industrial Revolution systematically at all, and connecting this to these epidemiological conditions, to factory conditions, to what he called social murder. There was nothing else like it at the time.
John Bellamy Foster is his name. He's professor of sociology at the University of Oregon and the editor of Monthly Review magazine. We are talking about his new book. It's called The Return of Nature, Socialism and Ecology. I'm C.S. Song, and this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. I want to skip ahead to the 1870s and 1880s, so much later in Engels' life. He worked on a book he never finished called Dialectics of Nature, and that book was published after his death. And this book is of prime importance in your new book, The Return of Nature, and it's about environment and ecology and ecological thinking, maybe kind of some of the beginnings of ecological thinking, and we can talk about that. But what does dialectics mean? Dialectics of Nature was the title. What does dialectics mean?
That's very difficult to answer. It's simply because it's a form of analysis and a way of thinking that is designed to capture complexity and movement and change and transformation. Normally, we look at the world in very reductionist ways. We see wholes that are made up of parts, and the parts come before the wholes, and we see all entities as separated from each other, and they're somehow put together. It's sort of a mechanical, reductionist way of thinking that we normally pursue in the intellectual world, in our normal ways of thinking. Dialectics is all about flow, movement, interpenetration, transformation, what we call emergence, that is the development of new levels of organization out of earlier of forms of organization, embodying new principles. All of this has become basic to science. Science needs this kind of complexity in its understanding. And dialectics is really about the complexity and interaction and transformations, evolution, contradictions that we find in the natural world and in our own thought and in the relation between the two. So it's hard to define simply because it's all about complexity.
Did Engels see human society as something separate from the natural world, from the natural environment? Did he see the necessity of kind of analyzing human relations and human existence as separate from the natural world?
Well, when we talk about that kind of separation, we're usually talking about a dualistic view. But a dialectical view is all about interpenetration and the contradictions in the interpenetration of things. So Engels's viewpoint was not that nature and society were separate from each other. Human beings are a part of nature. Society is an emergent form of nature with its own principles, but still part of nature. And we can talk about the relationship of society to nature, society or being a part of the entire universe that constitutes nature. And we can, just like we can talk about the heart as a part of the body, right? We can talk about them, we can separate them out, abstract them in order to look at their interrelationships, but they're still integrally related and within a process of complexity and change. And so, he didn't see society and nature as separate, but society is something also that is an emergent form within nature. And if we're talking about, say, capitalist society, it's in very antagonistic relation to the natural world as a whole. And this is one of the things that he discussed.
And how would you define ecological thinking? I mean, the emphasis is often on the interconnectedness of all things, the fact that phenomena don't just occur in isolation. Are there other elements or aspects of ecological thought that you like to emphasize?
Well, I think the core element in ecological thought is actually the concept of metabolism, which is hard for a lot of people because they only think of metabolism when they're thinking of weight watching and going on diets and so on. But in science, metabolism really means it's the whole process by which living things extract energy and matter from the environment and integrate it into their own system, process it through their own biological systems, and then it leads to waste on the other end. But this whole process that we go through constantly in drawing within our own bodies from the external environment and processing that, which is what makes life possible, that's seen as metabolism, and it's seen as a process of exchange with the environment. And it was this concept, as it developed particularly in the 1850s, that Marx took on and then Engels took on, and they made this concept of metabolism central to their ecological thinking. Marx used the notion of social metabolism, and the concept of metabolism becomes the very basis of all ecological thinking. So the notion of ecosystem is based on that model, that the whole framework of systems ecology is based on the notion of metabolism. When we explain the Earth system, we use the concept of metabolism to explain that. So this was the beginning of systems ecology, but what was interesting about Marx's and Engels's approach to this is that they integrated the notion of metabolism into the understanding of society, to a critique of production. They saw production in society as the social metabolism, as the relation of production to the external environment, and they showed how our society actually creates rifts and ruptures in that metabolism and therefore ecological crises. So Engels, as well as Marx, dealt with that, but he expanded the dialectical view of nature beyond that basis as well.
Engels saw environmental degradation going on around him, not just in relation to industrial activities in a manufacturing town like Manchester, England, but globally. To what extent did Engels see colonialism as generating ecological devastation?
Well, it's a very interesting question because a lot of the early knowledge of ecology, our understanding of ecological destruction, came by way of colonialism. I mean, it stands to reason. If you look at islands like St. Helena or Mauritius that were colonized early on, and the European colonizers could see the effects. They could see the transformation of the environment and how chaotic it was. And they learned a lot about ecosystems and the ecological transformation that way, the hard way. And you can see in Darwin's journals and his writings on the voyage of the Beagle, for example, he looked at how the introduction of goats in St. Helena had contributed to the destruction of the vegetation. And Engels picked up on all these things. He talked about the deforestation in St. Helens and what they called desertification and the effects of the introduction of invasive species. So this kind of thing was very clear. And both Engels and Marx wrote about the effects of British colonialism in India, the destruction of the irrigation system in India, and the, how that had created famine. So they looked at this in all sorts of ways, understanding this as what we would call an ecological problem.
My guest is John Bellamy Foster. He's a sociologist. He's editor of Monthly Review magazine. He's written a number of books, including Marx's Ecology, The Ecological Revolution, and The Robbery of Nature, which he wrote with Brett Clark. And his new book is The Return of Nature, Socialism and Ecology. John won the Deutsche Memorial Prize for this book. The prize is awarded for the best and most innovative new writing in or about the Marxist tradition. We have a link to more information about John and about his book, The Return of Nature, on our website, againstthegrain.org. I'm CS, and this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. Friedrich Engels wrote about society racing to ruin like a locomotive whose jammed safety valve the driver is too weak to open. So what kind of ruin was Engels pointing to or envisioning, and who did he think was leading society to ruin?
He believed that capitalism as a system geared primarily to the accumulation of capital and not geared to the needs of the population or to the environment was leading to all sorts of disruption of social existence and environmental conditions. And Engels, like Marx, said it had become a question of ruin or revolution. And to understand this, you can look at how they examined the ecological destruction in Ireland, you know, the time of the potato famine in the next 20 years, and how the Irish population was being basically exterminated in the language of the time. Extermination meant both death and also removal, you know, removing people from the land, sending them abroad. And they saw the ruin in Ireland. They saw the ecological destruction. And they saw this all over the world. And of course, they saw the enormous mortality imposed on the working class in England as well. They saw the famines in India, and they believed that the capitalist system, although it advanced productive forces, was extremely destructive, and that it was possible to create a more equitable and sustainable society, which was socialism and communism in their view.
And so if the opposition or the dichotomy was between ruin and revolution, what kind of revolution did Engels think needed to happen?
He believed in a working class revolution, and it actually is even clearest in the condition of the working class in England. But it's interesting, Marx and Engels are sometimes accused of being anti-peasant, but they weren't at all. Engels wrote a famous work, The Peasant War in Germany, about the 16th century revolt of the peasants led by Thomas Munzer. And both Marx and Engels sided with Munzer, with the peasants, and they pointed in various works to the need for worker and peasant alliances. So they weren't narrow in that sense at all. Incidentally, Munzer wrote this famous statement, which Marx liked to quote. Munzer said that the birds, the water, all living species were being turned into commodities. And Marx insisted, and Engels insisted, that we had to move away from a society where everything in existence, everything associated with life was turned into a commodity, or we would wreak destruction on ourselves.
I'd like to focus more on the Dialectics of Nature, again, this unfinished book by Friedrich Engels that was published after his death, because it, I think you've told other folks that it forms kind of the heart of your book, The Return of Nature, even though I should say The Return of Nature, John's new book, is a genealogy of great eco-socialist thinkers. It covers the period from the death of Marx, that's in 1882, to the emergence of the environmentalist movements of the 60s and 70s. So there are a lot of thinkers and strands of thought addressed in this book, but Dialectics of Nature is very important to your analysis. What Friedrich Engels wrote about nature and the dialectics that one could find that sort of characterized the natural world. You write that Engels derived from Hegel, another very important influential thinker, three dialectical laws or principles, and the third one, negation of negation. Now that sounds very technical, but I'm going to hope you'll flesh that out for us and make it accessible. That seems to be an important principle or law that has, as you write in your book, been very influential. And it gets into this issue of emergence and emergent properties. Is that right?
Yes. Some of you may have read Marx's Capital, and if in the section on so-called primitive accumulation, in the final chapter of that section, part 8 of Marx's Capital, volume 1, Marx is talking about how the capitalist class and the landed class expropriated all of the land in England. They expropriated the commons, and they expropriated the common fields. So that by 1870, in England, 5% of the people owned all of the land. The rest of the population had none. And this was a historical development of the expropriation of the peasants and the creation of a proletariat or working class. And Marx, at the end of Part 8 of Capital, on so-called primitive accumulation, refers to the expropriation of the expropriators. What he means by that is that it's necessary to reverse this process on a higher level in a dialectical transformation. There has to be what he calls there a negation of the negation. That is, the process of the expropriation of the population has to be turned around, and the expropriators have to be expropriated. The commons have to be returned to the population. There needs to be a socialization of property, of means of production, of the conditions that determine people's lives. So the negation of the negation is this sort of notion of a return at a higher level to conditions of commonality, of the commons, of socialism, of communal collective organization. And Marx used it in that way. On a more general level, what the negation of the negation stands for Engels as a philosophical principle, as an ontological principle, as we say, underlying laws. What it stands for is a kind of spiral form of development. Development doesn't occur in a linear fashion, but it occurs in a spiral fashion where elements of what were in the past, which are residues that are leftovers from the past, are still present and play a role in transformations that generate the future. And as we move forward, we also recover some of what existed in the past, but at a higher level. So it's this notion that what we thought was a simple movement from A to B is much more complex than that, because A is never completely surpassed, but it returns at the next level.
His name is John Bellamy Foster. We are talking about his new book, The Return of Nature, Socialism and Ecology. We'll return and speak more with John about this book, this award-winning book. Please stay with us. And this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. My name is C.S. Song. John Bellamy Foster is editor of Monthly Review magazine. He's a sociology professor at the University of Oregon. He's written a number of articles for Monthly Review over the years. One is called Engels's Dialectics of Nature in the Anthropocene, which I've drawn on in preparing for this interview. And that draws on, in turn, that article draws on John's new book. It's called The Return of Nature, Socialism and Ecology, which looks at strands of eco-socialist thought, beginning with the death of Marx in the early 1880s and moving basically over the next century, exploring the history of socialist and materialist ecology in those 10 decades. And his other books, I mentioned Marx's Ecology, which I want to ask John a little bit about. That was sort of a landmark volume. His other books include Ecology Against Capitalism, The Ecological Rift, written with Brett Clark and Richard York, and The Great Financial Crisis, written with Fred Magdoff. So we talked about the kind of the third dialectical law or principle that Engels discusses in his book, Dialectics of Nature. There are two others. One has to do with how changes in quantity can lead to changes in quality. And the other has to do with the identity or unity of opposites, that is, the interpenetration of opposites. Can you elaborate on each of these?
Well, the law of the changes in quantity leading to qualitative transformations is very important in science. In fact, in Engels, it goes both ways. So changes in quantity lead to qualitative transformations, but qualitative transformations can also affect quantitative relations. But the notion that changes in quantity leads to qualitative transformations gives us the notion of phase changes, of emergence, of new qualitative elements in nature and society. And it goes against any kind of reductive notion of the relation of parts to whole, because nature and society are always passing through new qualitative transformations as quantitative change occurs. And it also points to crises. For example, the increase in carbon emissions into the atmosphere is now resulting in a qualitative transformation in the climate, what we call climate change, in a way that threatens human existence. But this is simply a product of the quantitative accumulation of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, but it's leading to a qualitative transformation in the whole Earth. So this is very, very important And it points to what we call emergence of new levels, new organizing principles with new laws. This is fundamental to science and to dialectics. The interpenetration of opposites tells us that unity of opposites, that we can't think in dualistic terms with rigid opposites and separations, but that these various elements flow together and interpenetrate. That doesn't mean that we don't make distinctions. We have to make distinctions in order to be able to analyze things. We have to look for contradictions, the incompatible developments of different elements within the same relation, various contradictions, and which lead to change. But we have to understand that we don't live in a dualistic world with rigid opposites, that everything interpenetrates and flows together in various ways, and that this is part of the process of change. And then all of this leads to the negation of the negation, which is really about the spiral form of development, how emergence occurs. All of this is critical to having a complex and dialectical view of natural relations and the relations of nature and society.
Yeah, and some of what you were saying about the importance of complexity, understanding complexity in nature, understanding ever-present change, makes me think of kind of the notion of unintended consequences, right? That we might think that maybe we have this new technological innovation and we think we know how it's going to play out in terms of human social structures and maybe individual use and our natural environment. And yet things can, to use another term you used earlier, can kind of spiral out of control. And the consequences of these kinds of human inventions or creations can have devastating effects.
Yeah, in the dialectics of nature, in the section called The Part Played by Labor in the Transition from Ape to Man, Engels presented a very powerful ecological discussion, and he talked about these unintended consequences, and he talked about various examples of ecological destruction that had been introduced by our economy that resulted in consequences that undermined whatever progress we thought we'd had, and how dangerous this could be to the human future. And he referred to the common notion of the conquest of nature and criticized that and said that we aren't conquerors of nature in the sense of a foreign people conquering some land and ruling over it, but that we ourselves are part of nature and exist only in its midst, and that if we don't adopt a sustainable approach to our environment, that we will see what he metaphorically referred to as the revenge of nature, these unintended consequences that will undermine our society. And he argued that because under capitalism, there's no real planning or rational control, there's no regulation of the metabolism between human beings and nature by the associated producers, as Marx had said, that we're facing more and more this issue of the revenge of nature.
You write in your book, The Return of Nature, that Friedrich Engels's analysis implicitly contained a notion of what we can call the environmental proletariat, which I assume has a different connotation or inflection than industrial proletariat, which is maybe the way people have thought about the proletariat since Marx's time. What is the environmental proletariat to you, and how did Engels advance that notion, in your opinion?
This notion of the environmental proletariat is something I've talked about for a long time. That hasn't really quite caught on, but I think will, because we're headed in that direction. If we go back to Engels's condition of the working class in England, his analysis of the working class isn't what you would normally expect if you knew about the history of labor or socialism or Marxism and so on. You would expect it to be a book about factory conditions and about labor in the narrow sense of the economy. But actually, the condition of the working class in England, and he was very much ingrained in the working class movement at the time, that the whole emphasis of the book and of the struggles at the time was about the food. It was about water. It was about sanitation. It was about the question of the adulteration of the food. It was about infant mortality and the high mortality of the population. It was about disabilities that were created by the production system. The whole analysis is really about the environmental conditions of the working class and the actual labor conditions, which are so critical, are only a part of that. And I concluded that the reason that the working class struggles were so radical at that time in England was partly because the workers were responding to their material conditions, but the material conditions are not simply factory conditions. They have to do with their entire environment. And when the material conditions associated with living in the environment come together with the material conditions, the exploitation that workers experience within factories, when these two things come together and become almost inseparable in the crises of the time and the responses of people, this is when you get a real radical movement, an environmental proletariat. And you can see that all over the global south now. You can see places, let's say in Bolivia, wherever you look, you can see situations where people are struggling over water, they're struggling over the land, they're struggling over food. They're not just struggling over what we've come to see as traditional working class, factory-related conditions. In fact, when you're short of food in the global south, you're facing a material problem that may be equally a problem of the ecology or the environment and of the economy. And it begins to be meaningless, whether it's economic or ecological. You're simply struggling over these material conditions that occupy all aspects of your life. And movements that respond in that way, we can call movements of the environmental proletariat, struggling over food, land, clean air, as well as working conditions, they all become connected. That's where we're heading in our time as a result of the ecological and economic crises of our time.
I'm CS. This is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. John Bellamy Foster joins me, editor of Monthly Review magazine. He teaches sociology at the University of Oregon, and we are talking about his new book, The Return of Nature, Socialism and Ecology. It's published by Monthly Review Press. So we've been focusing on Friedrich Engels. We've talked a little bit about Marx. And if anyone wants to learn more about Marx and his ecological focus, you may well want to turn to John's seminal volume, Marx's Ecology, which this book in some sense picks up from. Marx's ecology ended with the death of Marx and Darwin in the early 1880s, and this book, The Return of Nature, picks up at that point. So there are many other thinkers and writers and revolutionaries who are addressed and described in your book, The Return of Nature. Can you give us a sense of maybe three or four of your favorites and tell us a little bit about what you say about each of them?
Well, one figure that's not very well known is Ray Lankester. He actually occupies the first chapter in The Return of Nature, E. Ray Lankester. And he was Charles Darwin and Thomas Huxley's protege. Lankester was the leading biologist in England in the generation after Darwin, and he was also a close friend of Karl Marx. And Lankester was a major ecological thinker, most famous for his analysis of species extinction in the time. But he also developed ecosystem analysis under the name of bionomics. He's interesting right now because he argued that all diseases, he worked with Louis Pasteur as well, he argued that all diseases that we know, even plants and animals, and particularly the diseases affecting human beings, were all of human creation, were all the result of social disturbances in the ecological systems. And he pioneered in the development of the epidemiological critique that we're utilizing now in understanding the effects of COVID-19 and so on. But Lankester was a brilliant materialist and ecological thinker. And his student, Arthur Tansley, who was a sort of a Fabian socialist like Lankester. Lankester had read Marx's Capital and introduced the critique of capitalism into his analysis. Tansley grew up in a working men's college where his parents were involved and sympathized with workers. And Tansley became the leading plant ecologist in the world and introduced the concept of ecosystem based on notions of metabolism and influenced by the Marxist systems theorist Hyman Levy. And Tansley introduced that notion in the ecosystem notion as a materialist approach in response to various notions of ecological racism, or the actually ecological racist notions that were being developed in South Africa at the time. So you see this sort of development of a materialist and socialist ecology. You have a whole, a lot of thinkers after that. In the 1930s and 40s, you have people like J.B.S. Haldane, who was a Marxist biologist and also one of the two leading figures in the development of the neo-Darwinian synthesis when they integrated genetics into evolutionary theory. He wrote one of the first articles on the accumulation of carbon in the atmosphere, but he was a profound ecological and biological thinker building on Engels's analysis. So you have all of these thinkers that the truth is that they used to say, when I wrote Marx's Ecology, some people said, well, yeah, Marx developed these ecological notions, but there was no socialist ecology after that. I think I showed in The Return of Nature that it was actually socialist thinkers and materialist thinkers that created ecology in the century after Marx, leading all the way up to Barry Commoner and Rachel Carson and Richard Levins and Richard Lewontin in the United States in the 70s to the present. So it's a complex genealogical story, but it's profound, and we'll find that some of the deepest ecological critiques that we have are not the products of the present, but are the products of the past. And we have things to learn from that, because in these earlier analyses, they were more effective in connecting the social causes of our ecological problems to the ecological problems themselves, rather than looking at it simply in naturalistic terms. They were able to make the interconnections, which is what dialectics is all about.
John Bellamy Foster, author of books like Ecology Against Capitalism, The Ecological Revolution, and Marx's Ecology. His new book is called The Return of Nature, Socialism and Ecology. John won the Deutscher Memorial Prize for this book, and it took him 20 years to complete. It's a tremendous accomplishment. He teaches sociology at the University of Oregon. We have a link to The Return of Nature and to John's other work on our website, againstthegrain.org. John, congratulations on this book, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
And this is CS, suggesting the important thing is not to stop questioning, and we hope you'll join us next time. Against the Grain is produced by Sasha Lilly and C.S. Song. You can visit us online at againstthegrain.org, where you'll find on-demand and downloadable audio, resources, and more. You can check us out on Facebook at Against the Grain Radio, and you can follow us on Twitter at Radio Against.